Welcome to Flashback, a podcast by the Okaloosa County Public Information Office. Get ready to dust the nostalgia off your sleeve as we talk with Okaloosa citizens who share with us how things used to be. I'm your host, Nick Tomachek. It's time to step into your imaginary DeLorean, tap your flux capacitor, and flashback.
I'm a transplant to Northwest Florida, but I learned the main roads pretty quickly, as there aren't really that many compared to some other parts of the country. There's John Sims Parkway, Eglin Parkway, James Lee Boulevard, Ferdon Boulevard, Beale Parkway, Beale Street, as some of you old-timers may call it, Racetrack Road. Forgive me if I left out any of your other favorite major roads. But, of course, there is also Mary Esther Cutoff. Or is it Mary Esther Boulevard? Well, I guess it depends on who you ask. Actually, the stretch of road that is within the town of Mary Esther is called Mary Esther Boulevard, since 1991 anyway. And the part north of that is called Mary Esther Cutoff. Like most named roads, the names come from somewhere, and if you don't actually live in the city of Mary Esther, you may only know the name Mary Esther as a road. But in recent months, I've been reaching out and found some stories around the city in relation to a project that both Okaloosa County and the city of Mary Esther are working on, which is a new public park for non-motorized boats. It's on the Santa Rosa Sound at the end of Crystal Ball Road. I started hearing stories about the name Mary Esther, its early founders, and why it remains a steady bedroom community west of the bustling of downtown Fort Walton Beach, without much development or growth, at least compared to other areas in the county. Let's begin at, well, the beginning. The first settler to come to what we now know as Mary Esther was Jesse Rogers. At that time, it was known as the Narrows. Jesse Rogers came to the area about 1838. He's a cattleman from Mississippi. I want to read you a document that was acquired from the Rogers family in an estate sale by the current mayor, Chris Stein, and his wife, Betsy. It's a document typed on a typewriter, and it reads like a typical genealogy report, like listing descendants, dates attributed to routine census reports and such. And there is a description of Rogers himself. This is a description of Jesse Rogers by Rogers' granddaughter, Lydia Beatrice Rogers Gillis, citing several stories.
Jesse Rogers and his two oldest sons, Frederick and John Lewis, driving cattle and hogs over land, came to the Mary Esther area. Here they built a rude shelter for themselves and the animals. Jesse disappeared in the woods for several days. When he returned, he told the boys he was going back to Mississippi to bring the rest of the family and their belongings. He also instructed the boys not to leave the clearing, as there were many Indians in the area. When the boys asked about the food, he told them not to worry. After their father left, every few days, the boys would find fresh game hanging from the trees. They were not molested by the Indians, in fact, never saw any. Jesse was a taciturn man, temperamentally disinclined to talk. He never explained, but the boys always thought he made an agreement with the Indians. He claimed from Town Point, now Gulf Breeze, Florida, to Boggy Bayou, now Niceville, Florida, and as far north as he wanted to ride. He ran cattle over most of his land. He was very badly bow-legged, almost to the point of being a cripple. Jesse Rogers rode a horse most all of the time. If it became dark when he was out checking on his cattle, he made camp wherever he was and stayed the night. He had numerous line shacks covering his land, and he was staying in one of these the night he died at age 91. The shack caught fire, from which he escaped, but died of pneumonia caused by exposure. Jesse Rogers came to a sad, solitary end, and is, if to heap misery on his memory, careless gossip catalogued him as having been a pirate. Aside from the fact that he was not of the cutlass-swinging, gold-plundering era, his physical build, bow-legged and less than 5 feet tall, distorts the sea rover picture. He was a cattleman, and by breaching the new frontier, he made a mark for himself and left a family strain that was, and still is, prominent in the Mary Esther area. By the time he died, he had broken with most of his children over the Homestead Act. He wanted his sons to help him hold his land by the weight of his pistols. But when the older sons homesteaded part of the land, he never spoke to them again. He finally had to homestead his home place to save it, but this didn't change his attitude. He remained on friendly terms with the only NEP pus and booger. When his son John Lewis died in 1882, Jesse came to the cemetery and sat on his horse. He never even came to speak to the widow standing there, 6 months pregnant, or with his small grandchildren. In later years, he became a recluse, which led to some to believe that he was morosely guarding his buried treasure, a speculation which caused his first burial site to be repeatedly desecrated by ghoulish treasure seekers. He was buried by the only two sons who remained with him. The burial site was one he had selected in the middle of a triangle of three huge trees located just north of U.S. Highway 98 at Mary Esther, Florida. His grave was regularly dug up over the years, so on March 12, 1965, it was legally moved by his great-grandson, John Vincent Rogers. Jesse Rogers now rests among the oaks at the Jesse Rogers Cemetery, named for William Jesse Booger Rogers, who donated the land in Mary Esther, Florida.
I love the way that it was written. It really puts you back in that time period. It also points out some of the hardships that the Rogers family had, and probably similar other families settling in this area. Mary Esther, the name, came from another early settler, John Newton, who literally put the name Mary Esther on a map. By the mid-1850s, John Newton came to the area from near Dufuniac Springs. He was an abolitionist and a Presbyterian minister and taught school until he was forced to resign for teaching from anti-slavery books. He opened the first school during the Civil War, which also doubled as a church, and then established the post office on October 10, 1871, in the Mary Esther area. To be an established post office, the area needed a name. The most likely naming scenario that I have gleaned from talking with local historians is that he named the town after his two daughters, Mary and Esther. Although some in the past have believed it might have been named after his wife, but I'm going to go with the daughters. That is the story that I hear most often. With a named town, the post office was established, and Mary Esther can now be found on many maps from that period. The mail was brought in by a boat at Crystal Ball Landing. Neighboring Destin and Fort Walton, or Camp Walton, residents, they would travel to Mary Esther for their mail. Now, of course, the post office in Mary Esther is owned by, well, the federal government. But it is kind of an interesting tale of how mail was delivered at that time and how local waterways were used for just about everything. I mentioned earlier that some of the documents that I found in researching this topic came from Mayor Chris Stein and his wife Betsy, who discovered some tidbits from estate sales in the Mary Esther area. I sat down with both of them. Mayor Stein's story, while unique, can speak to why a lot of residents of Mary Esther are proud to live there and aren't in any hurry to see it change. Mayor Stein grew up in the 1960s and 70s in Mary Esther and recalls a lot of small-town musings that depict Mary Esther as a quiet coastal town where neighbors know neighbors and children had the freedom to explore the area without parental supervision.
Grew up, went to school. I was the first kid at the Mary Esther Elementary School when it first opened. It was an exciting moment. It was the first school around here that had air conditioning. I used to go over to the one that's now a ball field behind Home Depot. That was our first school that we had here. And off to off to college in Gainesville, flight school in Pensacola, and then I just needed to get out of Florida. So then I said, I'm going to California.
He said at one time he had a job at the Howard Johnson down the street, and in a very Mary Esther sort of way, said that instead of riding his bike or making his mom drive him to work, he just took his boat down the Santa Rosa Sound to work. What kid can say they drove their boat to work? Pretty cool if you ask me. Like a lot of people who grew up in Northwest Florida, Stein sought a life of adventure outside of Florida, joining the military, where he met his beautiful wife in California while serving in the Navy. He and his wife eventually made their way back to Mary Esther, where you can find the mayor on his low-speed vehicle, the Mayor Mobile, as I like to call it, cruising around town with a smile on his face and an aura of ease that accompanies many folks I have encountered in Mary Esther, and of course from folks who are retired. Here is Mayor Stein.
So tell me what it was like growing up in Mary Esther? Like, what kind of things did you do as a kid? And you talk about your junior high days, and what kind of things were people doing? What did it look like around here?
A big difference in what it is now, obviously. Highway 98 was two lane. I was a young kid when they were making it four lane at the time. It was a huge mess because it took forever to make it four lane. But that was one thing. Boats, nothing like now. I mean, they were almost, I mean, they were boats, but it was very few, you know. We lived on the water. We had our boat, so we went out, but it was not crowded at all. Used to make the big joke, you could swim from my house across Santa Rosa Sound over to the islands, to the Shoal Islands, the islands they used to make the channel, the dredge channel, mm-hmm. the waste islands, whatever they call it. And wouldn't want to do that now in the summertime with all the boats go by. But back then, nothing. Destin, Crab Island was an island. It had dirt on it, bushes, all sorts of stuff. We used to go there and anchor or pull up to the shore and go swimming, stuff like that. Beautiful. The harbor was nothing like it was now. I mean, mm-hmm. there was a few, I mean, the charter boats, the fishing rodeo, all that was still cranking around by then, but it was different. You know, small houses, not high rises, stuff like that. The beaches were not nearly as crowded. Used to... The sand dunes were five times taller than they were now from the hurricanes. There was one called Bald Eagle, which is a big, huge sand dune that had grass and bushes around the top, and then it had a bald white part. And it was kind of cool. Billy Bowlegs, they buried a treasure somewhere in the city, and you had to unbury the treasure, and people were out looking in the sand dunes for the treasure and stuff. School. You know, I don't know anything different for school. Used to walk to school. Buses, you know, very rarely went, you know, a mile or two. So we were about a mile from the school. So we'd walk through the woods here by 98, a path to the Mary Esther Elementary School.
Was there not a creek or something that you used to take all the way down?
Yeah, there's a, well, the creek right here by the City Hall, by this little cove, which used to be a marina. The cove right down here, you know, I think we talked about that, next to where the county and the city are going to build that non-motorized boat launch. That was a marina, and it had a bunch of buildings, and the boats were in there. And then to the left of the marina going in was a creek, and it went all the way up toward, if you're familiar with Beale Street, by Far Tractor Supply.
And that's the Gap Creek area?
Yeah, the Gap Creek, and it went right out into the, I believe it went out into Cinco Bayou. I think that inlet there is Cinco Bayou. And you could take the boat all the way up there, and now it's overgrown and everything. But back then, in fact, the friend I went with, which was the Matthews family, which lives right over here too, I grew up with them, he had the motor going the whole time, so it must have been deep enough to travel up that way and not have having to paddle. First of all, no cell phones. We had a phone with five families were on it. You know, the party line deal. Our neighbor had the phone, so we'd go over and listen to what other people were talking about. It was kind of cool. But my mom, she used the phone a lot. A lot of people helped others. Like my mom would take our neighbors. She had the car. And the neighbor did not, and they would go grocery shopping. Piggly Wiggly, still there back then. A&P was another grocery store, Del Champs, things like that. But we, they would help, you know, families like that take go places.
Well, at some point you decided to come back here after your military and civil service careers. Why did you decide to come back here after?
Well, we knew we weren't going to stay in Texas, and we had the option of basically retiring anywhere we wanted. And I asked my lovely wife here, where do you want to retire? And she goes, Mary Esther. And I said, you got to be kidding me. Why Mary Esther? You know, because I really didn't have a desire to come back that. I liked San Diego, that kind of stuff. I was more interested in seeing something different. And I was 56 years old when I retired. So it was like, you know, let's go do something. No, we had the property. We inherited the property, so that was an easy yes on that one. And it was a beautiful piece at the time when my parents bought it. So that helped out a lot.
And you're the mayor now, so you must like something about Mary
Esther.
That was
a joke, being the mayor. That was a joke. They had the sign out, write that sign right there. It said, Mayor Esther, looking for a mayor, inquire within. I saw the sign there. I walked in, and Dana Williams was the city clerk at the time, and she goes, I said, I want to be your mayor. And she thought I was a nut. You know, who are you? Are you live in the city? Are you registered to vote and all that? And I told her that. He goes, well, this is great, because the previous mayor resigned or termed out. I didn't term out, but decided not to run anyway. So she wasn't going to do it. So I said, sure. And she said, well, we have a council meeting, and it just happens to be tonight. Put on a suit and show up. So I went in front of the council, told them what I did, and they go, congratulations, you're now our mayor. So I got appointed as a 2-year term, okay. Did not get elected. 2-year term as the mayor. And that same night, before they did the appointment, and then they swore me in, and I said, okay, you know, not so far. You're the mayor now. You need to start the meeting. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I have no education, never even, me and politics were, until I got here, did not exist. Mm-hmm. All the Los Angeles, you know, San Diego, all those councils on, could care less, had no interest in politics, barely voted for the president. You know, that was about the only time I did vote.
What?
I shouldn't say that?
No.
Okay, I shouldn't say that. Anyway, all the councilmen and stuff, I could care less. Didn't have any desire to be in government at all. And then all of a sudden, now I'm sitting in the thing, run the meeting, and I kind of liked it. And I finished the 2 years, and everybody was pushing, going, you really need to vote, because Mary Esther mayor doesn't vote. Other mayors around here do. And they said, you really need to vote. That's where you need to go. So I tried it, did not like it.
On the council?
On the council, yeah, because of Florida Sunshine Laws and all that. And basically, for me, you couldn't talk to anybody. You had to, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And I just did not like that at all. I said I would never do that again. So when the term came around again, I went for mayor, and one person ran against me, and I became the mayor 2 years, and this time it's unopposed.
And you have your lovely bride here, Betsy, and what did you like about Mary Esther that you kind of coaxed him back into coming back home?
Well, he forgot a little bit part of that story, and that was that we have two daughters that grew up coming here for vacation every year. And so when we were looking at retiring, they both begged us, don't sell that property. And coming from California, waterfront property is like, you cannot get waterfront property in California. So I knew the value of it. Plus, I've been coming here since the 80s as well, since we got married. So we like Mary Esther. It's completely different than a, big urban area, which is pretty much where we've lived for the last, prior to living here. So... Yep, that's why we're in Mary Esther.
And not much has changed. I mean, you can't expand the highway much more without, getting a lot of pushback from residents and like yourselves, and I would assume. And, having that waterfront's pretty unique as well. A younger generation might say chill.
It's very chill. In fact, on the last election a couple years ago, we were doing some campaigning, and we talked to people that have recently moved to Mary Esther that had been coming, almost the same story, who had been coming to this area for vacation. And one of the reasons that they really looked in Mary Esther specifically was because they liked that old Florida vibe here. So the trees over the highway, it's kind of unique even in Okaloosa County to have that kind of old Florida kind of a bedroom community.
And Mary Esther's mostly built up. In fact, we were looking at it today, and 1982, it was
3,500.
Now we're a little over 4,000.
Oh, okay.
20, 30, 40 years later.
We should probably mention, just because of who we work for, Cristobal Landing, the area where the city and the county have partnered to build a nice new park out there. That was actually where the mail came in.
Mm-hmm.
And Betsy, the maps you were showing me earlier that show Mary Esther.
Right.
Maybe that's why it was
absolutely
put on the map.
I think it just made sense. If you look at the distance from Pensacola, where the mail would come, initially, Destin would come, they would come here to get their mail.
Okay.
Every few weeks. So, and provisions. And then that's why the Priors started a general store. And they ended up becoming, they had the post office for a while. So it's a long line of the post office in Mary Esther. We really like our post office. We still like our post office.
Oh, it's great. It's great. Yeah, I go.
We don't own it, though. Some people are confused
right,
about
the federal government owns the post office.
But Mary Esther's residents, we're very, very proud of our post office. Next door neighbor had been coming to this area from the 40s, too, I believe, as they vacation, and then they bought property. And he used to love to tell the story of Mary Esther also had one of the first telephones in the area, because someone had retired from Southwestern Bell, and their retirement was a telephone line.
Oh.
And they had to run the line down from, I believe, Crestview at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, was it in Pryor Store? Or yes, there was a line in Pryor Store. If you needed the telephone, you went to Pryor Store.
That was the first phone.
So, yeah.
Interesting retirement present. I mean, just to run for one person, you know, but it'll end up the whole town. Okay.
Tell me about Charles Lindbergh.
Well, supposedly, you know, the Cedars, we have a condominium on 98 called Cedars Condominium, and it used to be a hotel. There's stories about Charles Lindbergh's plane breaking down on the way down from Pensacola and him staying here. There also, though, in some literature says that Fort Walton claims that he stayed there as well. So, you know, everybody wants to claim Charles Lindbergh.
Charles,
you know, it's all the famous stories everybody wants to have a part of.
Charles Lindbergh flew his plane all the way to France. Most of the way he flew by the seat of his pants. A good old American know-how, that's the right way to be. And if he's good enough for Lindbergh, he's good enough for me.
If he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me. If he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me.
I found an article by the Playground Daily News written in June 1968 that recalls early stories of the first settlers in Camp Walton and Mary Esther. It was written by Marilyn Hall. She writes as if she had experienced this early life herself. She writes about the Lindbergh incident in this excerpt. Bucks was the only filling station on this part of the inland waterway where launch owners could tie up and get gas without going ashore. It was also the mall, pier, and the debarking point for Camp Walton. Saltz, not sure who Saltz is, warned Buck, a landlubber from Ohio, yes, it actually says landlubber in the article, that his store built over the water will be swept away by the first blow. But the hurricanes of the years did not jar it from its pilings, and only once did its contents get wet, this not from the sea, but from torrential rains blowing under the roof. For a child, there was no store like Buck's. Its dark recesses held the savor of good cheese and dill pickles, of gas line, fishing tackle, tar, and nets. But the main smell was the salt smell of the bay lapping under. With a marvelous feeling of uncertainty, you could see the sea water swinging and flashing through the cracks in the floor. Quote, "We handle everything but babies and coffins," Mr. Buck used to say, "and we make those." Stern Wheeler steamboats like the Captain Fritz, the Belle, the Vernon, and the Old Florida tied up at Buck's, as did the oldest motor launches, the Grace, the Anna, and the Swan that brought the mail. Bucks was never lacking for pretty girls of all ages who came in to buy green sun visors or a pair of play shorts. The South senators and governors passed through Bucks. Twice a lady off a yacht from Pensacola drank Coke there. She was Wally Simpson, destined to marry the Duke of Windsor. Once a gangling, freckle-faced unknown named Charles Lindbergh crash-landed near Mary Esther with a broken oil line. The Shipley boys took him by boat to Buck's, where his oil line was patched together again. No one thought anything of the incident until some years later when Lindbergh flew the Atlantic. Pretty cool story, if you ask me.
If he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me. If he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me. If he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me.
The Steins were a delight to talk to, and I'm sure there's a bounty of more stories that could be told about the city of Mary Esther. Flashing back to a time where this coastal life shaped would exist today is a dreamlike, nostalgic experience when I put myself back in that time and in this place we call Mary Esther. My dad would always make a joke as we drove through small towns when I was a kid. He would always say as we approached the town, "Don't blink," as if to say if you blinked, you would miss even seeing the town as we drove through. I hope the next time you drive through Mary Esther, you keep your eyes open and remember the people that fought for a better life, a life of their own, and a life that bettered their neighbors here in Okaloosa County on the waters of the Santa Rosa Sound. This episode was written and researched by me, Nick Tomacek. The theme music is by Jason Shaw on Audionautix.com. Special thanks to Jerry Ann Chancellor for her part as a voice actor in this episode. Also, big thanks to Mayor Chris Stein, his wife Betsy, and everybody in the city of Mary Esther. That'll do it for this episode of Flashback. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you around town.